A boat is required to be watertight because if a boat starts taking on water, either over the top of the edge of the boat or through holes in the boat construction, then that puts the boat at risk of performing its purpose. And typically in a boat, then you put in a bilge pump that takes out small amounts of water that leak in, and the more leaky the boat is, the bigger the pump is. So from a house perspective, leaks refer to the uncontrolled flow of air into and out of the house through the building shell itself. So typically in Australian houses, that can be between the joins between the floor and the walls, between the walls and the roof. It could be around door and window frames, underneath doors, and all of that sort of thing. So if you can't control that leakage, heat from outside, so if it's a heat wave, can travel into your house and make that house much hotter than it needs to be. But it's also, if you do use air conditioning, the coolth that you're paying for in your air conditioner can also leak out. So you're also, it's like letting your money flow out under the door and through all the cracks as well.
What makes a well-designed house? You know, is it double brick? Is it the direction that it's facing? What are some of the things that make a house well-designed and non-leaky, I guess?
There's a couple of things. I'm not one who believes in any particular one material. Mm-hmm. I think the main consideration needs to be what climate zone are you in, and really understanding what the nature of that climate is and the orientation. So in the southern hemisphere, if you face your main living areas and the long axis of the house facing the equator, so facing north, it will be much more affordable to produce a highly performing house thermally than if you face it any other direction. It's possible to do, but you have to make a lot more effort to do it. So the most cost-effective way of producing a energy efficient house is first of all the orientation and consideration of the climate. And then it's things like how much shading do you need in order to make sure that they shade the house from the summer sun but allow the winter sun to come in to warm up the house. So it's shading, it's insulation, it's materials, how much heavyweight materials or thermal mass or thermal density you have depends on the particulars of the climate, and the ability to ventilate when the outside climate is acceptable or you get a nice breeze, whatever, being able to bring that into the house, and then being able to, if the house does get too hot, somehow being able to let that heat out.
Are we going to have to start thinking in the future about how our current buildings are designed and how we're going to be designing in the future as well, because the climate seems to be changing?
So yes, we do have to consider, I think, our changing climate. And part of the problem with that is the way that our building regulations currently work. So that for new houses now, you, in most parts around Australia, you have to get a particular energy rating for your house. So it's called a 6-star, which is sort of an indication of how comfortable your house will be and how much you might have to pump heat in or out of the house to make it comfortable. But the weather files that is based on are taken from the 1990s in general. Mm-hmm. So we're building houses now with an expected life of roughly 50 years, but we're building them to a climate that is already, let's say, 25 years in the past. So one thing I think we really need to do is actually, when we're designing houses now, give them a rating for how we would expect them to perform into the future, maybe at a halfway point along an expected 50-year life. So if I'm building a house now, I should be rating it for what we think our climate will be in the 2030s, for example. As well as, we perhaps need to rate our houses by a stress test, because it's often only in the extreme events that we get really concerned about the performance of the houses. So maybe each house needs to have a stress test. So if you're designing a house today, what would happen if you applied to it for 1 week the temperatures that Sydney's been experiencing last week? How many days would it take before that house would become unlivable if air conditioning was not available, for example, if the network went down because the whole eastern seaboard was having a heat wave, so, and the electricity industry couldn't cope with that stress? So maybe some sort of stress test is required so that we think about protecting ourselves before the bad event happens, before the extreme event happens, rather than thinking about it the day before the Bureau of Meteorology say, oh, we're expecting a heat wave next week.
The main crux of your article as well is that if everyone gets an air conditioners and overuse them, then everyone is sort of paying for it. What are the effects of overusing air conditioners on the electricity grid and also on back pocket?
Yeah, so in some instances, that horse has already bolted. So, for example, in southeast Queensland, 70% of houses have air conditioners, and the bulk of those might have two, three, or four. Split systems are quite typical up here rather than ducted. So the electricity industry over the last 10 years has already spent millions and millions and millions of dollars on the network in case those air conditioners all come on at the same time, for example. And that's what we're paying for currently in our day-to-day price of electricity in kilowatt hours. So in some ways, we're already paying for poor house design that's been going on for the last 15, 20 years. But then during a heat wave, if everybody uses their aircon and cranks it up a lot, and if they don't close their doors and windows and try to manage the building as well, those air conditioners are working really, really hard, which then works all the poles and wires of the electricity system really hard and enhances the potential for that network to overload and to then stop altogether, which then, so it's a sort of a cascading effect.